When I was a junior in high school, I started dating one of the sophomores. Her name was Betty Aho, her last name showing that she was from the large Finnish community in our hometown, Fitchburg, Massachusetts. I don't remember how I met her. The only thing we had in common was membership in the high school's marching band. But she was one of the eight majorettes that marched in front of the band, and I played trombone. In those days, the major social activity for teenagers was the record dance. The high school held one in the gym almost every Friday night, and a nearby Finnish athletic club had one almost every Saturday night. I went to most of them and danced with many of the girls who attended. Betty was one of these, and I probably danced with her more often than the others. I usually walk her home at the end of the dance. She lived in a block of tenements that was about a 15-minute walk from the high school. When we got there, we'd sit on the stairway leading up to the back doors of the tenements. We hugged and kissed and talked about our life ambitions. When I graduated from high school, I enrolled in Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, about 120 miles west of Fitchburg. The college was still on a wartime schedule. It was July of 1945. World War II was just about to end. So RPI's new freshman class started early in July, and I was in it. Later, Betty's mother drove her out to Troy for one of the school's big dances. But absence makes the heart long for a girlfriend. I started dating a student at Russell Sage College in Troy and broke up with Betty. Then I changed colleges and went to the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. After spending a year or so there, I realized that Betty was my true love and started courting her again by mail and in person when I was home on one of the Academy's two annual vacations. By my junior year at the Academy, she was my one and only, and she was my date for the ring dance. Old ladies like to advise young people on their romantic affairs. My Aunt May, mother's eldest sister, admonished me, "Don't marry a Finn. They get fat after they have their first baby." I think I heard this from her more than once while I was dating Betty, before we were married, of course. She never got fat, was as slender the day she died as she was on our first date. I spent 24 years in the Navy before retiring. When I retired, I became a proposal editor, and I still do some editing as a volunteer, editing concert programs for Fort Worth Chamber Music Society, for example. One Saturday, long after we'd retired from the Navy, Betty suffered a severe stroke. She couldn't stand up, and I couldn't get her out of her bedroom to take her to the hospital. I called 911, and the emergency crew brought in a sort of folded wheelchair. They put her in it and used it to get her down from the upstairs bedroom. They took her to the hospital. The next day, the doctor pointed out the large, dark spot on the MRI of her head and was getting steadily larger. He recommended that we take her off of life support. I nodded, then went to tell my family gathered there what I'd done. The love of my wife for 55 years, passed away quickly, silently. A few years after Betty died, a woman who, like me, sang in the choir of Peace Lutheran Church, lost her husband. I didn't know him or her either, but knew the sense of loss she must have been feeling. Some months later, the Artisan Theater was putting on a play that I thought I'd like to see. Perhaps Susan, the widow, would like to see it with me. She accepted my invitation, and we enjoyed each other's company, as well as the performance. Over the following weeks, we did a number of things together, and I met her sons and daughter and their families. One day, I took her out to Carswell Air Force Base. I'm a retired Navy, so I can shop there. I needed some fairly expensive items and would save a few dollars by buying them there. She was just going along for the ride. As I was driving through Fort Worth, I turned to her and asked, "Would you marry me?" I think the question surprised me as much as it did her, but a few gulps later the answer came out, "Yes," and it was enthusiastic. It was a simple thing to set up the marriage at Peace Lutheran Church. We just had to pick a date and time, and the church and our friends took care of the rest. Our third anniversary is approaching.
These stories just keep bringing the tears on for some reason. Is it due to that to y'all? I hope so. First of all, I'd just like to say thank you to Dick and Sue for sharing Dick with us, and for your story that you told as we kind of close out our series here this evening. You know, one of the most difficult things that we can experience in life is having the loss of our spouse. It is something that impacts everybody a little bit differently. As we look into the lesson for this evening in Lamentations, it's a book that I think is a little bit more obscure in the Old Testament than maybe some of the other books. You know, most of us probably don't automatically flip to Lamentations when we're trying to go through the Bible, but it's a great book. One of the interesting things is it's written by Jeremiah, and it's written about 586 B.C., during the time of the fall of Jerusalem. And this was the capital city of the southern kingdom of Israel, which was called Judah, and had just been conquered by Babylon. So during this time when the book was written, the city was burning, the temple had been desecrated, and families were being torn apart. So Jeremiah turns in his grief to poetry to express both his lament and also the lament of the people of Judah over all the loss that they were experiencing. This book is still used as an expression of grief and of mourning by the Jewish people today in a community setting on the ninth of Av. For those of y'all who don't know too much about the ninth of Av, it's a day when historically there's been like a curse on the Jewish people. The temple was desecrated twice. They claim that the World War II started on the 9th of Av. So it's just really not a great day for the Jewish people. So one of the truly interesting features of the Book of Lamentations is that it's set in the form of an acrostic poem. So I don't know how many of y'all are in school or remember school, but that means that each letter of the alphabet begins a verse. So in the Hebrew here, it begins with an A or Aleph, and goes all the way through to Tav, or which is a kind of a T in our language transliterated. So as you look at the text here, I've kind of highlighted the first word on each line there. So the first one is like there A, then B, then a C, which is actually a G for them, and then D, Daleth. And it goes throughout that method on each chapter. So each chapter has 22 verses in the book of Jeremiah, in the book of Lamentations, except for chapter 3, which has 66 verses. So in chapter 3, what Jeremiah did was he did each letter three times. So he had A three times, B three times, Z three times. So it's something that our English translations really don't capture. It's incredibly hard to get that nuance to travel over. But I believe when we look at the book of Lamentations, that it still has quite a bit of value for us today as we continue to experience and explore both community and personal loss and grief. It put words into our hearts that enable us to cry out from the depths of pain that we might be experiencing. So as you think about the grief you've experienced, I would imagine some of the words from the opening chapter of Lamentations may be able to help describe your experience. The tears flowing down your cheek. The loss of people that can speak words of comfort. Feeling unable to find any rest. A feeling that you are alone. These are some of the powerful emotions and experiences that grief brings into our life. The book of Lamentations spoke these powerful words as the Jews wept bitterly at the loss of their families, at the loss of their house, their home, and at the loss of their country even. When we kind of look back through art, there's actually a few different depictions of kind of this time in the history of Israel. The first that I found that I thought would be interesting for y'all to see is by Rembrandt. And as you can see here, Rembrandt painted a picture of Jeremiah, and it's called Jeremiah Lamenting the Destruction of Jerusalem. He painted that in 1630. I don't know how many of y'all know this, but Jeremiah is called the Weeping Prophet. So he was the one that was kind of crying a lot. And when you think about kind of where he was in life, it's sort of understandable because he saw the fall of Jerusalem after he predicted that it was going to fall. The next painting we're going to see here is by Gebhard Fugl. And if you know art better than I do and know how to pronounce his name, please let me know afterwards because I have no idea. But this is called By the Rivers of the Babylon, and it was painted in 1920. And basically what this shows us is all the young men and the old men of Israel that are already in Babylon by the river there, grieving the loss that they've had, their families, their homes, and their country. Grief is a difficult subject, isn't it? It's hard to think about, it's hard to talk about. One of the things that I wanted to do before I gave this message was to talk to Glenna. And those of y'all who know Glenna know that she's our computer analyst here at church in terms of statistics. If you want to know a statistic about anything in terms of church stuff, she's the right person to go to. And so I asked her, how many widows and widowers do we have in our congregation? About an hour later, she came into my office with a piece of paper and said, Pastor, we have 58, and that's the only ones that I know for sure. So people like Susan and Dick technically wouldn't be in that number because they've remarried. So they're not currently widowed or widowers, even though they are. So there's actually a higher number than that. But it made me begin to think about some of the other statistics that I didn't make her try to crunch. The number of families that have lost a child. The number of people who have lost a parent or maybe a sibling. The grief and loss that happens with job transitions, house transitions, even the loss of dreams or expectations about the way that life's supposed to be. As I began to think of all these things, I became quite humbled, realizing that on any given day, there's a huge number of people here at Peace that are probably grieving. One of the things that I do on a regular basis is grief ministry, visiting the shut-ins. A lot of them are on that list of 58. And one of the things I've learned over the years of my ministry is that no experience of grief is the same. Everybody experiences grief differently. And the funny thing is, even with the same person, if you give them the same situation in two different times in their life, their experience can be completely different. And so it's something I've noticed in this past couple of weeks, especially as we look at the community grief happening in Euless in this area after Officer Hoffer was shot. We see that different reaction of loss happening. When we think about the grief in our lives or the experience that we have, what are the laments that we speak or think? What words do we choose to use to describe the internal pain and suffering that we're feeling? How do we channel our grief or sense of loss? Do you tend to isolate yourself to allow yourself to have a little bit more time to heal, to mourn? Or maybe are you the kind of person that is jumping right into the next thing or even heavier into stuff that you're already doing just so that you can distract yourself from the pain, from the thing that hurts so bad? Maybe some of us have some of those nagging questions. Why? Why me? Why right now? What did I do? Did I do something to bring this on to myself? Is there anything I could have done differently to have prevented this from happening? When we start to experience those thoughts and questions, they shake us to the core at times, don't they? They can stretch our faith even to the point where we think it might be breaking. But staying connected to God through grief doesn't mean that the hurt and pain go away. Staying connected to God simply means holding on to Him with everything we've got as we're hurting. Those of y'all who have experienced grief and maybe had some time after it probably understand this real well. Grief never disappears, does it? Even years later, we can still experience that stiff northern wind blowing right through us, taking our breath away. It may be as we look at an old picture, eat that wonderful bite of food. Maybe it's listening to that familiar song, and we're right back at that place where we don't know what to do. But again, staying connected to God during grief doesn't mean that we're not going to have that hurt or that pain. It simply means that we hold on to God with everything we've got throughout the grief. You see, Jeremiah knew that really well. If you look at the book of Lamentations, the first three chapters are Jeremiah weeping, mourning, lamenting over the grief that he and the people of Judah felt. In chapter 3, there's a little bit of a turn as Jeremiah gives us a glimpse of hope, a glimpse of the light at the end of the tunnel that he sees. Jeremiah writes, "Every morning your compassions are new. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in Him." See, Jeremiah and the people of Israel, they were waiting. Ultimately, they were watching for the day that the Messiah would come and bring fulfillment to the kingdom of Israel. For us today, we get to look back, right? We look back to the cross, to the day where Jesus showed us the ultimate expression of what faithfulness is as He took our place, all of our grief, our sorrow, and died. That He would rise again on Easter morning, where God's compassion and His love shines brighter than the sun. He truly brings this grace and compassion to us every morning as He wakes us up. And we have the opportunity to experience God's love and faithfulness, even in the midst of the pain and the sadness. I don't know about y'all, but it's been kind of interesting the last few days since the time changed. I'm glad that you all showed up on time tonight. I don't know if y'all were able to be here on time on Sunday. I personally was off on Sunday, and so I slept in. I timed that right, didn't I? But it's interesting because when you wake up now, the light's out, right? At least after a few minutes, you kind of watch the sun come up instead of having it been up for quite a while if you wake up at 6 o'clock like I do. And, you know, every morning it reminds us that God's love is there as the sun comes up, that God's shining favor on us. So I wanted to take another opportunity just to say thanks to Dick and Sue and to all of the folks who have participated in our stories of peace that told their story for us during this sermon series. There's an awesome story that came out a couple years ago. Disney made it into a movie last year called Inside Out. Some of y'all seen that? Okay, so if you haven't seen it, it's kind of cool. It's a little kid that they tell the story of based on her emotions. So they've got different characters for each kind of emotion that she has, at least five main emotions. And as you look at the screen here, you can see sadness. And sadness tells you the story just by looking at her, right? You can see the angst behind her glasses, that pain that just something's wrong. You know, sadness and grief are both powerful emotions that we all experience at different times in our life and in our journey of faith. Sometimes we just need to slow down to allow ourselves to have time to lament the challenges that are before us. So I'd encourage you to stay connected to God during the pain, knowing that the journey of faith does not prevent us from experiencing that hurt or pain, but instead knowing that the victory has been won, that Jesus won that victory for you on the cross. As Romans 8 says, even death can't separate you from God's love. And our loved ones who have gone before us, they're seeing that love, that faithfulness face to face right now. God reminds us of that love each morning as you see the sunrise, as you see the sunset, and helps us to give us strength for the new day. You know, one of the best resources that we have is each other, right here at Peace. People that God has placed into community with us to continue to tell our stories, to continue to share our lives with during the great moments, but also during those sad moments, during those challenging moments of life. So I'd encourage you, as we go throughout this rest of this year, continue the stories of peace, one day at a time, one person at a time. Tell your story, listen to their stories. Amen. And now may the peace of God guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Amen.